Coming to you from deep in the heart of Texas, this is Punk Brats, a podcast focused on the lives and experiences of our military brats. We didn't serve, we got served. Now here are your Punk Brats, Rose and Lisa.
Hey, it's Rose.
Hey, it's Lisa. Welcome to another episode of Punk Brats. Hey, Rose.
Hi, Lisa.
We said hey at the same time. We're so sisters. We are sisters because we talk over each other.
Yes. And
hi, honey. I've missed you. So anyway, it's been a minute. So what's been happening? Tell us.
I figure we just jump right into it and answer Paul from Eugene's question from the last episode.
Oh, yeah.
He wanted to know what the coolest or most random souvenir we've ever collected in all our moves. You want to go
mine's
first?
Mine's going to be my shot glass that I bought. I think I might have mentioned this in another episode, but I bought my very first shot glass. Yes, that type of shot glass where you put liquor in it and you drink it really fast. I was in 10th grade in Germany. I'm ashamed of this, but not really. I still have it. It's a little mini Stein with a pewter top, and you use your thumb to open the top, and it's a little shot glass, and I still have it to this day.
That's so cool.
Yeah, a little German Stein shot glass. What's yours?
So I had to think about it because there are several things, but I'm just going to share that I think my favorite souvenir, and I still have to this day, are my concert tickets from Germany. Because if anybody's seen European concert tickets from back in the day, they're like pieces of art. They're not like the ones you get from Ticketmaster here, you know, where it's just kind of like that computerized font. And there, it's kind of that universal. In Germany and Europe, the concert tickets were like pictures and huge. And they just had like either the album artwork or just whatever tour it was. And
I remember that. Like, I think just, I even remember having one that was a hologram.
Yes, I did have one that was a hologram. Yeah,
that's cool.
And so I've kept all those and I still have them. And I think I might even...
You should frame those. Why do we keep our stuff in a box?
I don't know.
Of stuff we need. You know what? I'm going to go through my stuff. But thank you for that question. And Eugene from...
Paul.
Thank you, Paul.
Yes. Thanks, and hey, Paul. That was a really cool question.
Yeah. And if you have a question for the Punk Brats, email us at info@punkbrats.com or call us at 512-254-5989. Ask your question. Rose. So school's back in session for you.
Yes, we're into the swing of things.
I heard there's a new rule.
Welcome to Texas. We have a new Texas state law that students are not allowed to use their phones from bell to bell. And it's been a challenge, but it's been really cool. We've seen some really positive results from it. But I have to tell you, it's even been a challenge for me because, you know, I'm trying to model this new policy with our students. So.
Yeah, I couldn't do it.
Sneak out into the bathroom into a stall to text Lisa.
I know we had an event coming up.
I didn't want my students to see me using my phone.
We had an event coming up, and all I get is this text saying, "I'm in the bathroom stall. I'm texting you secretly because we're not supposed to have our phones." And I'm like, "What? You know what? I would go crazy because that would be like taking away my Walkman in the 80s. You know, because I relied on my Walkman for during my classes when I didn't have a class, like the free period time. You know, and then you know, but." Anyway, wow. Well, good luck on that challenge, girl, because I love my phone and
I'm getting easier. It's been liberating.
I can't walk away from it.
Although when I do turn it on, I haven't, I swear, a minimum of 50 text messages because our family group text is very active. And now we have that fantasy football.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yes. Our family's playing fantasy football right now. There's like 12 of us and we're so crazy. But hey, remember like when we were growing up and how all of us are half something. So, you know, you could speak a different language. Like, for example, in Germany, you know, being in an international school, we heard all kinds of languages, right?
Yeah.
But what about the kids who didn't speak another language? Remember when we lived in Japan and you taught me that language, G language?
Oh, the G language?
Yes. You the goose, how the got me the gee, how the gal, to the goose, but the geek, to the gila, the gang with the gidge.
the guy did the good.
Yeah.
And if you understood that, let us know.
Yes, if you understood that, let us know. But
Lisa actually said, you taught me how to speak G language. And I said, I know, or I did. I don't even remember.
Well, you had to teach your friends. Similar. We had to teach each other because like,
well, yeah.
And it took patience, but we learned it. Remember when we taught it to our other friends so that we could talk about like other people or our parents or whatever, you know, but anyway, we taught Natasha. Remember when you taught Natasha at the International School of Dusseldorf? Natasha is one of our very dear friends. And speaking of Natasha, Rose invited her to join us today. So why don't we just ask her directly? Come on out, Natasha.
Hey, Natasha. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going?
Oh, my gosh.
It's going great, Natasha.
We have Natasha, Rose.
I know.
Natasha from ISD, International School of Dusseldorf. Oh, my God. Welcome, Natasha. It's been a little while.
Oh, yeah, just a little.
Yeah. So we were just talking about how lots of military brats grow up in like dual language homes or speak another language, or one of their parents speaks to them in a language and they answer in English, which was a lot. And like in my case, my mom spoke Korean and then I answer in English. So we also had made up languages, and you, your background, you're Dutch, right? Your mom is Dutch, or both Correct. Your mom and dad are Dutch. So tell us a little bit about your background, and then tell us how you got introduced to G language.
Well, like you said, I was born in Europe. I'm born in Holland in Hunsbrück, and my mother remarried to an Air Force man. Mm-hmm. And we started traveling, and we kept traveling, and not easy. I was raised in Louisiana. I didn't know a lick of English except the word shut up. That
Good
was
one.
The only word I knew when I came to the States. So I learned to speak English, and my mom was trying to reiterate me to keep my language to keep it strong, but I kept answering in English because everybody was making fun of me.
Oh.
So the last day of my junior year, we moved once again, and I moved to Germany, and I met you ladies at ISD, and you guys are amazing, and you taught me the official gibberish, and the gander, the guy, love a gov, you the goo, the guys.
We the gila, the gov, you the goo.
And I don't know how I still remember it. I'm 56 years old and I still remember this language.
Girl, it was the only way we could all talk about our teachers and stuff, right?
Right.
Or talk about, Rose and I used it to talk about our parents behind their back.
Well, so who all did you teach this language to? Where did, I never knew where it came from.
You know, I did not even realize or remember that I had taught it to you until I got that message from you on Messenger. And I was like, oh, my gosh. Wow, that's crazy. Because we learned it from when we were stationed in Japan from
friends
brats
from Hawaii.
Brats who had moved from Hawaii. So but yeah.
And we called it G language.
Uh-huh.
Because everything is a G, a G.
Yeah.
Oh, I better not give away the secrets. Then people will figure it out. Figure out your language on your own, people.
Oh, my goodness.
So, Natasha, after ISD, where did you end up? After ISD, where did you move back to? Where did you move?
I moved back to Pennsylvania. My stepfather was stationed here at Carlisle Barracks. He retired Air Force, and then I was still in Germany, and I graduated ISD. I went straight into the Army.
Okay. And thank you for your service, by the way.
Yes, thank you.
I spent 8 years in the Army. I am now a disabled veteran. A lot of PTSD and anxiety.
Well, you know, our organization, our parent organization, Hats Off for Veterans, we have a program called Courage to Connect. And Courage to Connect is for veterans worldwide to log on once a month. And it's a peer-to-peer where you can talk with one another about your challenges. And we don't let the licensed counselors that are on there and the trauma coaches,
we just sit back and we just let the veterans speak amongst each other, because who is the best to support you? Those who Absolutely. Know and understand.
And I'm so glad that I got a chance to talk to you guys and learn about this, because I'm always looking for somebody to talk to that's either can relate to my situation and that is a veteran and that has served, and somebody to talk to. So I think that's awesome.
Well, Natasha, you are a natural.
I appreciate that. That's awesome. Yeah, I auditioned with my baby brother, Brett. Of course, he's all military, and my older brother's military. So we were all Army brats.
Well, I knew you had a younger brother, but not an older brother, because Brett was a sweetheart. I remember Brett always being so sweet.
He
was like two or three years younger than I was. And now I see him all over on TV, in movies, and I'm just so proud of him, too. Hey, maybe, Rose, we can get Brett on here as a punk brat.
Oh, yeah. We should interview Brett as well.
That would be awesome. Yeah, that would be awesome.
Well, you and Rose are the same age. You guys are both class of 87, so you guys hung out more. But I did hang out with Natasha a few times in the Altstadt. Had a drink or two. Oh, my gosh. I could keep talking to Natasha, but unfortunately, we have to move forward. But Natasha, oh my gosh, girl, it's been a minute, but I promise you will hear from the Quintero sisters again.
That would be awesome. I love you guys. I miss
we
you
love
guys.
You. And you the gila, gorgeous. The gov, you the goose, so the goma, the gutchka, the girl.
You're the girl of the goss of the gum.
So the ganky the goo.
Okay, so we always, whenever we talk to someone and we end the segment, we always say "see you later" because we're military brats and we don't say goodbye.
That's so right.
See you later.
See you later.
Oh my gosh, that was a voice from the past, Natasha.
How cool! I miss her.
We've had some good times, that girl and I.
I'm sure you two have also.
Yes, we have. We have. We have a long history between us.
Oh, my gosh.
So. But hey, guess what? We have an upcoming guest on our show, our featured guest on our show.
A very cool guest.
Uh-huh. Someone who's worn a lot of hats. He's a journalist, a media executive, and a fellow military brat. Lincoln Milstein is in the house.
So we have with us today Mr. Lincoln Milstein. Mr. Milstein, am I saying that correctly?
You are.
Oh, good, good. I'm Lisa. I'm Punk Brat Lisa.
I am Punk Brat Rose. It's such a pleasure to meet you, and thank you so much for joining us on our podcast. So, first of all, we would like to just get to know you a little bit better. So, if you could just tell us where you were born, where you grew up, and what branch of the military you are a military brat. Take us through college. How you feel when people ask you, like, where you're from, because everybody answer all military brats answer that question differently. So I'm curious to hear your answers.
Yeah,
is
me
that
too.
Right? That's interesting. So anyway, I'm a demographic a little older than you guys are. So I was a military brat in the Vietnam War era, and I grew up in Taiwan. My single Chinese mother with three Chinese kids, she worked in a typing pool for the American military in Taiwan in the 50s.
Oh, wow.
And because she could speak, she had a command of the English language, so she was a typist there. And she met my stepfather, Benjamin Milstein, who was a GI stationed in Taiwan in the late 50s. And they fell in love, and they got married when I was 9 years old. And I said, Chinese boy one day, and next day I was an American boy.
Wow, that is a big change right there. Yeah.
So I couldn't speak the language, and they put me into a Catholic missionary school with my brother and sister, because that was the only school that would accept us because we didn't speak English. And anyway, my stepfather, a wonderful man, I love him like my real father. He formally adopted us and gave us his name, Milstein. My Chinese name is Lee. Anyway, he was stationed with the Taiwan defense force in Taiwan in the early 60s. We left there in 1963, and he got an assignment in Fort Carson, Colorado. And then we went back to Taiwan, where I spent my high school years. And I went to the University of Connecticut because my stepfather said, "Hey, I'm from Connecticut, and you ought to check out to see if there's a college in Connecticut."
Okay, that's awesome.
Right. And that's a fairly common story with brats.
Yeah. You
know, they don't know where their dad's from, and their dad says, "I'm from this so-and-so, this place." Well, back in those days, I was considered a resident. So I applied to the University of Connecticut. I got a full ride.
Oh, sweet.
Yes. And so, and that's how I became, you know, what I am today. But anyway, those are my formative years. So I'm an adopted military brat. But my story is probably not that uncommon.
Yeah, but you know what? I don't think you need to put the word adopted in front of that. I think you're one of us. You're a military brat. Just say you're a military brat. Actually, you're a punk brat. You're a punk brat.
I'm proud to be a military brat.
You are now.
I do consider myself a complete military brat. So thank you.
Wow, and you got to go to Colorado, Rose. I would have loved to have lived in Colorado as a military brat.
So we were stationed at Fort Collins. Fort Lewis outside of Seattle and Fort Belvoir outside of Washington, D.C.
Are you a skier?
I used to be, yes.
Yeah. See, we like skiing. So that's what I mean. Like, you're naming places that would be fun for our family.
You guys ski in Texas?
No. Well, Rose is not the skier. That would be me and my family and I. We
Lisa
like to
travels
go and ski.
To Colorado.
We go to Colorado. We like to ski at Beaver Creek.
So anyway, my Chinese mother, so the first time we moved to the United States was 1963, and we moved to Colorado Springs. And here's a Chinese woman who's never paid full price on anything, okay, because in China, everything is negotiable when you go buy something. So she goes to Sears Roebuck, and she wants to buy a refrigerator. And so they told her what the price was, and she said, "Okay, what's the real price?"
I love it.
Let's barter.
Right. So this Chinese woman started negotiating with a salesperson. She would not leave Sears Roebuck until she got some kind of discount. So this poor guy, she finally negotiated a discount from his own
but she negotiated and got her
from his own commission. Poor guy. he gave her some kind of spiff off of the full price so she could. And that was my mother in Colorado.
That's an amazing story.
I'm sure your mother.
We've seen our mother barter. Oh, yes. Our mom's good.
I'm sure your mother has had a lot of the same conversation.
She gets us some discounts.
I mean,
mom's done good.
I wonder if that's just an Asian thing.
Yeah,
maybe in
I was going to say.
I mean, our listeners know that we're half Korean. But my mom, I remember being in Korea and going to the markets, and you never pay what the price is. You always negotiate. Yeah, and you're always going back and forth, you know. But I want to take it back, especially with your background. When people ask you where you're from, what do you say?
I say Taiwan.
Taiwan.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
That there's no ambiguity in that. I say I'm from Taiwan. And then they start asking me questions.
Gotcha.
They're curious, like, why am I from Taiwan? Then I start to tell my story.
Okay. That's so cool.
Yeah.
Sorry, Lisa.
I was going to say, like, you know, Rose, when you talked about us being Korean, not only are we military brats having to work, you know, having to deal with that culture, and then the culture being all overseas, the culture being a military brat, but like, being Asian.
American culture, too.
The American culture and the Asian culture. Gosh, there's so many things we have to follow.
Well, obviously a good percentage of military brats are hoppers, right?
Yes, we are. Yes.
All over the world. And that's probably a underrepresented group. And now, back then when all the fathers were the ones in the military, but today, so many mothers are in the military.
Mm-hmm. True.
So, right? And so.
Yes.
So, I would love to find out the data of how many HAPAs. I call them HAPAs. I love
no,
that.
No, yeah. That's what we call.
What we refer to ourselves. Yeah.
Yeah.
Our military brats. It's a substantial number.
You know, I'm curious now that you said that. I wonder, gosh, could we even do a study like that to see how many military brats are half so-and-so and this and that? And
yes.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, because like when you think about it, just all the cultures that we have that we might even go through, like, for instance, let's think about it. When we were living overseas, let's say when we were in Germany, we have a Korean mom, so we have that Korean culture that we're exposed to. We're American kids, so we have that American culture. We're also overseas in Germany, so we have to adhere to that culture. And then we're also, did I mention military brats?
Military kids. We're military
kids.
And then
the military culture. So, you're going through all sorts
of... We have more than one culture.
And, you know, a lot of soldiers in Germany married German either wives or husbands.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, like our father married our mother.
Yes.
Yeah. He met her in Korea.
Yeah. When everybody was being sent to Vietnam, our father was sent to the DMZ.
Wow.
And he met my mother in Seoul, or I guess in Korea. Yeah, in Seoul. So fascinating. So when you were 9 years old, your father and mother got married and when they got married, did they get married overseas in Thailand?
They got married in Taiwan. He was already
stationed. Taiwan. And so did you start school in an American school in Taiwan?
Yes, I started in the English missionary school. Yes.
Yeah. So you went from a Taiwanese school,
to a Chinese school.
Yeah.
One day and the next.
Yeah.
Second,
oh my.
Yeah. And I couldn't.
Now, that is because you see, Rose and I, we've never started school in our lives on the first day. We've always been the new kid. But for us, we're Americans, right? And so we're going into a new classroom with other American kids. For you, not only are you not American at that moment, this is a whole totally new experience for you. How did they welcome you? As military brats, I want to know how we treated you. How did they welcome you into the classroom?
They were okay, except like everything else in the military, there's a hierarchy. So my stepfather was a sergeant major, and he was an NCO. Okay, and they clearly had a hierarchy where the officers' kids were treated a little differently by the teachers, and and so you kind of learn to deal with that. And I want to ask you guys, have you ever heard of a book called Military Brats written by Mary Wirch, a woman named Mary Wirch?
I don't believe so, but I'm writing that down.
I'm not familiar with it.
So here's what's interesting. There are not that many books written about military brats. And in the 90s, I was based in Boston, and I heard about this book written by this woman, and she was living in Massachusetts. And she wrote a book called Military Brats, but it's about the dark side of growing up in a military family. And she referenced in her first chapter the movie The Great Santini.
I remember that movie. Yes, okay. I've seen it.
Yes. Okay. So she talked about how her family grew up like the Great Santini's family, right? And so in the 60s, when we were in a war, that was a fairly common theme. It was kind of the dark side of being a military brat. Fathers were very authoritative.
Yes.
Right. And spent way too much time in the officers club. Right. And so anyway, I would recommend this book to your listeners, called Military Brats by Mary Edward Wirch. Now, she interviewed 80 families, okay? She came to some interesting conclusions, which I think really rings true to me. She said, military brats, first of all, they're extremely resilient. you can give them any situation on earth and they can handle it, okay? Because they've had to handle it. On the other hand, they don't have long-term relationships. Every 2 or 3 years, they're forced to break up, as I had to do, break up with my girlfriend. It was, you know, and break up with your friends. And the chances are you'll never see them again.
Yeah.
Right?
True.
So once you've experienced that, you're really kind of protective of yourself on relationships. We can talk about that, whether that rings true or not. But for me, it rang really true, which is you're really resilient. There's nothing you can throw at me that I don't think I can solve. But on the other hand, I have problems with attachment and, you know, getting to know people and trusting that relationship will last.
Are you an introvert?
No.
Do you consider yourself an introvert?
No. I'm an extrovert. But still, you know, there's a psychology where, hey, if we grow up, we know this relationship has a hard end in 2 or 3 years. You protect yourself.
Yeah. We actually had a 17-year-old reach out to us. I think I've told the story on 2 or 3 of our episodes, but it's just one I always reference. A 17-year-old called and messaged me and said, how did you and your sister do it? Because I'm in high school and my father has moved me 5 times in the last, I think he said 4 years. Mm-hmm. And it sounds similar like to my husband who moved 12 times in his 12 years of high school, of schooling. But this kid said that he had an attachment, a problem with making friends and getting attached because he knew his father would turn around and move him. And he said he was very depressed. And just like Rose, you said earlier off camera, you know, when we weren't recording and we were just talking to Lincoln, you know, personally, you said you want to just sometimes hug a kid and say, it's going to be okay. I promise there's light at the end of the day, you know, or end of the tunnel. And
yeah.
I don't mean
there are some kids. It is tough for some kids, though.
Go on the dark side. But the positive side is.
No, it needs to be said.
No, it needs to be said. Yeah, it does.
You know, the positive side is I think most military brats I meet are incredibly self-sustaining, resilient people. They know how to solve problems. They know how to solve social problems because they've had to do it all their lives.
Yeah,
exactly. Which is true.
Yes,
I absolutely think that's true. And, you know, like you said, we all handle it differently. For instance, every time I moved, my border walls around myself would be that I would close myself off and I would be unapproachable. And I somehow found that when I'm unapproachable, that would make other kids want to be my friend because I guess there's some sort of like mystique in that. Lisa, on the other hand, was a class clown and she would, you know, be in front
I'm
of people
the extrovert.
And she would start to laugh and smile and, you know, tell jokes. And so when we would get on the bus at the end of the day, you know, the school day of our first day, there I am sitting all by myself with nobody around me. And I look back and Lisa's already sitting in the back of the bus where all the popular kids are on the first day. So,
but yeah. Hey, you guys, we could talk about young kids, but you talk about resilience. So how did you take your background of being a brat and cross over to become, well, tell our audience who you are as far as your profession. You are very successful. And can you please now tell everybody from college what you did and how you became who you are and how you retired? And well, tell your story from there.
So my Chinese mother told me, you're going to go to college and you're going to become an engineer. And that was the end of that conversation.
Sounds very familiar.
Right. Yes. So I went to college. I started engineering. I hated it. And meanwhile, I love writing and I love the English language. So I started working on the college newspaper, which I loved, and spent all my time at the college newspaper as a reporter. And then I dropped out of engineering. I did not tell my mother I dropped out of engineering. for 3 years. Okay.
Wow.
That's then brave.
Then I became the editor-in-chief of the college newspaper.
Oh, cool.
I got a job as a reporter at the Hartford Courant. So I called my mother and I said, I got to tell you something. I'm changing my major. She says, what? So yeah, and I'm dropping out of engineering. I'm going to become a newspaper man.
Oh no!
Right, and my Chinese mother says, "That's great."
Oh,
she said, "You're going to go work for the government because communist China."
Yes,
all the newspapers are run by the government. And she said, "Great." And I said, "Well, thank you, mother. That's what I'm going to do." Anyway, I worked 10 years at the Hartford Current. I worked 16 years at the Boston Globe. I worked 5 years at the New York Times. Then I went to become an executive at the Hearst Corporation. And so, I don't know. There was a gravitational pull for me to become a journalist. First of all, I like to shoot off my mouth. I'm very defiant. And being a reporter and journalist totally suited that. And I think there was something in my upbringing as a brat too that inculcated that kind of behavior, you know, because we question everything. Like, I don't know if it's accurate to call us cynics, but we tend to look at the big picture and what's on the other side. And so anyway, I had a career in journalism and I retired 5 years ago, but I'm still writing a local news blog.
Well, you left some names out.
I was a senior vice president at Hearst.
Yes, that's big. So you know why I admire, I'm so excited about talking with you. And when I read about your history, your background, because my degree is in mass communication. And when I took history of mass media and some other courses, we learned all about the Boston Globe and the New York Times and all these, you know, newspapers and magazines. And never did I think that I would ever speak to someone who was an executive from one of these amazing, you know, backgrounds. And so it's a big honor for me to talk to you because my dream was to be a journalist. I wanted to be a sports broadcaster. I wanted to do sports journalism or sports broadcasting. And unfortunately, I didn't end up doing that. I'm still in mass comm and I do get to write press releases and stuff like that. And so I love my degree.
Yes. Well, it's not too late because you're in Texas.
I'm focused on the punk brats.
Lincoln, we were introduced to you talking about journalism from Max Letterer, publisher of the Stars and Stripes. What is your, did you have a role with the Stars and Stripes or what is your connection with the Stars and Stripes?
Max is an amazing person.
Yeah,
he is.
He's a military brat, but he's also served himself as a Desert Storm. And he was a lawyer in the military. So he's got serious chops, and then he became publisher of the Stars and Stripes, and which is the equivalent of a two-star general in the military. Mm-hmm. His current civilian job, but anyway, he called me and invited me to sit on the board of Stars and Stripes because I grew up reading the Stars and Stripes in 1960-61. Mm-hmm. And he said, that's a great connection. We have somebody on the board who actually grew up reading the paper while he was a kid. And so he invited me on the board. And I've only been on the board about 6 months. But he is so exceptional. I'm sure you guys have learned from him. He knows so much.
Yes. And, he was fascinating to interview.
And I'm really looking forward to kind of reconnect with my roots, because these were my roots, like my roots. We were brats, and so I'm eager to meet all these military people. Now they're of a different generation; they have different lives, they have different challenges, but at the core, you know, brats are still brats. They still move
absolutely.
Around.
Well, do you attend reunions? Have you put a reunion together? Have you reached out to friends? Have you looked for people?
Do you still connect with people from your childhood?
Yes, here and there, because I think that's one of the problems with brats is we have so many old friends all over the world. It's really hard to find them, right? I mean, I had my best friend in I had my best friend when I was 9, 10, 11. Then I had my best friend for the next 2 years. Then I had my best friend for the next 2 years. This is a familiar story for you guys.
Yes, very familiar. That's why I'm cracking up.
It's so funny. Everybody's a best friend. Yeah.
Right. And of course, I'm not in touch with any of those best friends I had in grade school. So, but I have great memories. And every one of those segments taught me a lot. And it's part of growing up. And I'm sure they have similar stories to tell, you know, and God, they went all over the world. So I'm really happy that you guys are doing what you're doing, because you're really connecting this almost subterranean group, this cohort that I think is, I don't think there's enough attention paid to it. I'm surprised at how little's been written about it, but the psychology of it, the sociology of this group is just fascinating. And you guys are tapping into that. So I'm very
glad. Thank you. Well, I mean, like we write on our front page of our, on our website, we try to tell people that, you know, brats come in all stages of life, from childhood to senior adulthood. Just back in February, we had a Camp Zama reunion in Austin. And there were a bunch of us from class of late 70s to early to late 80s, because I'm 89. So I was right at the end. And you know what? There were about 25 of us, and we shut down a karaoke, you know, bar. And and when the guy was at the karaoke bar, I was explaining to him, I'm like, yeah. He's like, who are you guys? Because we're all half Asian something, right? He goes, y'all all are like Asian or something. What's going on here? I go, we're military brats. And he goes, really? I go, yeah, we all lived in Camp Zama, Japan, and we all just still stay in touch. He goes, really? I go, yeah, and we're all 50 and 60 something years old. But look, we're having fun as if we were 15, 14, 12, 11 again. Mm-hmm. It was awesome. And it's that way every single reunion with Camp Zama, every single time.
Every time I meet a brat, my first question is, where were you stationed? And, you know, I'm looking for a connection, right?
Right.
You know, often they're stationed in Germany, they're stationed in Europe, and I'm looking for that Asian connection. Every once in a while, I'll find one. So, I was, we were stationed in Yokosuka in Japan.
We know Yokosuka.
And I say, oh, what year? And they would tell me, I said, oh my God. And then I found one that actually played Little League Baseball against me.
Oh, wow.
In a Pan-Asian tournament. And, anyway, those are wonderful connections. And then they tell me about their lives, and I tell them about my lives. But, you know, look, I was a brat in the 60s. I remember landing at Midway Island, Guam. I've been to Kadena Air Force Base. I've been to
Hickam. Wow.
You know, I've been to Korea. I've been to Japan. And so I've been to Manila. And how can you replace it? It was all free.
Yeah. So, and your dad returned your father. Right. It was for us too, especially going to Hickam. You mentioned Hickam. We loved going to Hawaii on Space A's. Your dad retired Sergeant Major?
Yes. He retired Sergeant Major. He's buried in Arlington. He's a veteran of Korea, Vietnam, and World War II, three wars.
Wow.
Yeah. When you go to his grave marker, you'll see three wars. So I miss him. I'm really proud of him.
We'll find him next year, because we go to Washington, D.C. to lobby on behalf of our veterans. And we also, we want to go visit Max and Corey and the folks at Stars and Stripes. And so we, our agenda is we go to Washington, D.C. every April.
Well, let me know when you're there, because I'd love to meet you there.
Oh, that would be awesome.
You know, and do you go to Arlington Cemetery?
Yes.
We went to Arlington Cemetery on our last trip, and it's an amazing
place. When you just look across the hillside and see just the lines of stones, and it's amazing.
Well, you guys, guess what it's time for? It's time for the lightning round. Woo!
Wow. This is my favorite part of our interview, because this is where we get to know our guest on a different level, just on a fun level. I'm going to ask you some questions, Lincoln, and just answer whatever first thought comes to your mind. And if you can't think of an answer, you can always say pass. But I am Going to come back to it.
She'll come back to it.
These are fun. Okay. Question number one. Place you've never been to that you would like to visit.
I would like to go to Germany. I would like to go to, what's the big air base there?
Ramstein?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Next question. Burgers, tacos, or sushi?
Burgers.
Print or digital?
Both. I mean, you can't just rely on either one of those.
Yep. Okay. First job you ever had, and how old were you?
I was a bag boy in the commissary at Fort Belvoir.
I knew he was going to say commissary or something, like all of us.
Favorite city you lived in?
Oh my God. See, that's a problem for Brett, because we probably have about 10 cities that were our favorite cities, right?
Right.
And so it's really hard. I can't answer that, because I love Seattle. I love Colorado Springs. I love parts of Washington, D.C. And I love all these cities over in Asia. So, mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, so. That is a hard one. Next question. beach or snow vacation?
Snow.
Okay. Dream dinner guest, alive or not alive?
Mick Jagger.
Cool. Oh, that would be fun.
That would be your biggest pet peeve.
Why, in this digital age, when things are supposed to work so smoothly, it's so hard to work everything from your iPhone to your computer, how many clicks there are, and how much time we spend trying to fix those problems. A promising technology that's got more, that ties up more of our time than you think.
Mm-hmm. True. How many languages do you speak and or understand?
Two. Chinese and English.
Okay.
And Chinese was my first language.
And when you read The Stars and Stripes, do you go to the news, comics, sports, or different section first?
Well, I go to the news first, because The Stars and Stripes is so objective. Mm-hmm. And now, particularly in the era that we're in, to have a news source that it just tells the facts.
Yeah.
And, you know, without any analysis, any opinion.
How about when, this is a bonus question, how about when you were a kid, which section did you go to first?
Sports.
Okay, the sports section.
Yay! You made it through the lightning round.
Woo! Yes, and our first guest, where I had to throw in a bonus question there. That's awesome. I love it.
Throwing a bonus question.
Yes, because I had to know. Because I read The Stars and Stripes as a kid too, and now reading it as an adult. I have it bookmarked actually on my home screen.
No, but even growing up, even as young as sixth grade, seventh grade in Japan, my father always got their Stars and Stripes, always, all through high school. It was always on our table. And you couldn't help but just, you know, being Asian, our mother and father worked all the time. We ate alone sometimes at the tables, right? You know, cooking our rice and ramen, quick meals, because mom and dad were gone working still. But the Stars and Stripes was right there. And you couldn't help but just read it, flip through it, and just educate yourself by reading it, you know?
So I have a suggestion for a future episode that you guys are going to do. Have you done much on food? Because food to me is all these brats.
Mm-hmm.
They go to a foreign base and all they're used to eating is, you know, American food, burgers and pizzas. And then it was really interesting. The part of the group totally disdained foreign foods. And then there was another part of the group that fell in love with it. Mm-hmm. And it became, like in Korea, for instance, right? I'm sure you guys had some brats who, like, didn't want to touch that local food. But then the ones who were really wanted to try it, that was like, it helped identify them for the rest of their life, right?
Exactly.
And food is part of a culture, right? And
it is.
Something that you learn. And so you should put together a panel of all these people from
a great suggestion.
That sounds great, actually.
To talk about food.
Just
what,
food.
What their favorite food was when they grew up in Incheon.
Yeah.
In Finland. and whatever, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, you say that, right? So whenever we talk to our friends from Camp Zama, all of us, and this is from the 80s, okay? Right. And I'm talking early, mid-80s. We all still talk about Mori Mori Bon Bon, our most favorite restaurant right off base where we could go get Japanese curry, rice balls. What else, Rose? Oh, my gosh. Mori Mori Bon Bon. Yes.
Udon, yakitori.
Yakisoba.
Just the street food.
The street food was really
right. What I
And so, like, if anybody is listening, with. If oh. anybody's listening to this right now right. from that time, they know what we're talking about.
Just street food. Just do street food.
And yeah. Oh.
Oh, my God.
You're getting me hungry, Lincoln. We're Korean. We're all about Korean street food.
For 25 cents in those days, I got the best bowl of noodles I've ever had in my life, right?
Oh, wow. My goodness. 25 cents. Wow. You know, it's funny. I'm going to reference back to Max again. But one of the questions we asked him in the lightning round was, what is the weirdest food you ever ate? And he had mentioned eating octopus. Was it octopus off the
ground? A live octopus.
Off the sidewalk. In Korea. And oh my gosh, I laughed so hard. I was cringing at the same time because I was like imagining it. And I was like, oh, I don't know if I could do that. But it was so funny. And I was just, I thought that was really cool.
So I have a quick question because we're running out of time here soon. So with your background in writing and in being a military brat and newspaper, in your view, how has media changed in covering military families, veterans, and brat life? Like now, do you think?
Or is there even any coverage at all?
Yeah.
I don't think there is. I think they're missing a huge story. Because they can learn a lot from the brats, because the brats really know the story. And that's kind of disappointing. You know, they cover the politics at the very top, you know, who's against whom. And that frustrates me because I made my living as a journalist. They should go down below and talk to military families and how they survive and what their challenges are and what do they think about the decisions being made. Look, at my father told me, a lifetime soldier, he says, I only want a few things from the military. I wanted to know who my commander was, whether it's a person I could trust. And I wanted to go into battle with the best equipment and weapons and tools I could have. Mm-hmm. And if I can get that, that's all I want from the military. And, you know, and so if they're not getting that today, like I think veterans care is a disaster. It to me, it's a tragedy.
Yeah.
Right? Now, we're not taking care of our veterans. I'm sorry to get political, but you know, you're not going to get that those kind of stories by just covering the Pentagon and the White House.
Yeah.
Right. You got to go and talk to
you got
to
get, yeah, like you said, it's the whole.
You got to go to the NCO club and have a couple of drinks with those people and listen to them talk. Right? And by the way, in my upbringing, the NCO clubs were always better than the officers club.
Yes. Hell yeah. You know, my husband is an officer's kid. My father-in-law is a retired major general. He got his 2 stars. And my husband, when we were boyfriend and girlfriend, didn't tell me much about his dad in the beginning. But now, of course, we joke all the time because I always tell him, you know, yes, I couldn't swim in your swimming pool, but you could swim in mine. I couldn't eat in your officer's club, but y'all could come into our club and eat in our, you know, eat our burgers and stuff. I go, but just remember you married an NCO's kid. Yes.
A real brat.
A real brat. My poor husband, he's a stateside. So he moved like 12 times, but it was always stateside. Where Rose and I went stateside and stateside overseas. Yeah. So is there anything you would like to plug or have anybody go and visit our listeners that you are working on or something that you're advocating for? Anything that you would like to bring attention to right now other than military brats?
No, I think that you guys are fabulous. I think that we should all work harder at this particular subject. It's an amazing subject, military brats. And it's so underwritten about, so undercovered. Just imagine the culture, the sociology, the psychology, the history. You know, it's a post-World War II history, basically, right? That's when we that's when the our government, the military, starting to have families overseas. But that's a long time. It's 75 years of history.
Wow.
And we just don't have that much data on it. I mean, you guys are, I love what you're doing. And so
thank you.
Do more of that.
Thank you.
And let's bring, I wish there was a way we could bring the brats together and share our common characteristics. I think there's a great value in that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's the goal of the Stars and Stripes, is for Military Child Month in April to do that. And because we've spoken with them, and I'm just so excited. That's why we're doing this together and collaborating and partnering with them, because come this next April in 2026, I hope that we get as many military brats to show up in Washington, D.C. Wouldn't that just be so awesome?
Well, please let me know if I can help with that, particularly.
Thank you.
Particularly with the Vietnam era kids.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, 'cause we are Vietnam era kids. We are. I was born in 71. I mean, our father,
right.
You know, Rose was
but
born in 69.
Cold War era kids, Lisa.
Yeah.
Yeah. More so.
Oh, like I guess I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Please. I'd love to come down to DC. I hope you talk to that.
And if you're ever in if you're ever in Austin, Texas.
Oh, you're in Austin.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, the other one's in Houston.
No, I'm in.
No, we're both here.
We're both here in Austin.
We're both here. Our whole family. We even got our parents to move to near us. We're all in the same subdivision.
Yeah.
Only our younger sister, our youngest, she will not move here. She's in Irvine, California, and she refuses to come here. So,
I understand that.
She's not a Texan at all.
But she doesn't understand that Austin is more like California than any other place in Texas.
Exactly. That's true. It is. Exactly. Austin is the new LA. Well, you were awesome to interview. And I see those guitars behind you. I know you play. Rose and I both are married to musicians who both play guitar and bass. And so please keep playing, because I've been watching your stuff online.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh,
so if you're not going to plug yourself, I'm going to plug you. You guys go find Lincoln Milstein online. It's M-I-L-L-S-T-E-I-N. And check out his Facebook, because he's got some riffs on there. He rips it.
Mm-hmm. And also to our listeners, we will link the book that Lincoln had plugged earlier.
Yes, Mary Wirtz. Mary Wirtz, Military Brats.
So if you didn't get that the first time, we'll link that on the website so you can reference that.
I warn you, it's a dark book. It's not an uplifting book, but it's very, very illuminating.
But we need that. And just to let you know, and I know I keep saying we got to cut it short, and we really do. For two seasons, Rose and I talked about fun stuff about being a military brat. It was our third season that we realized that we wanted to show a different side of military brats. And so our first episode, season three, episode two, we actually talked to a couple of military brats, actually three, who talk about living with the father with PTSD.
Yes.
And that it wasn't very pretty. Right. And, in the Haw sisters, a shout out to Julia and Michaela, who are at Fallen Patriot. That's why Rose and I finally realized that we need to also highlight both sides of being a brat.
Well, let me know how I can help.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, Rose, how do you take us out?
Okay, so Lincoln, we don't ever say goodbye to our guests because, you know, we're military brats, and somewhere down the line, we're going to see each other again. So we always just say, see you later.
See you later.
See you later. What a great interview.
Amazing.
What a man who's done so many things. And it's amazing that, like he said, his mother married his father, who adopted him, and Rose. You know how we always say we're like the new kid? He literally went from a school where he was speaking that language and then put into a military dog school at 9 years old.
Amazing.
What a challenge. But you know what? I just loved how he shared his story and how he just overcame the barriers and the challenges of the language and everything and became so successful. I really admire him. I do.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, me too. And what I love most is that he never forgot where he came from. And, you know, he's spoken before about his brat perspective gave him resilience and a worldview that I guess a lot of people don't really get unless they've lived it. And he has certainly lived it. And I have the utmost respect for Lincoln. It was amazing.
Me too. Thank you again to Lincoln Milstein for taking the time to speak with the Punk Rats. Mm-hmm. And we hope that we get to work with you again real soon, because after we were done interviewing him, he gave us some really good ideas, and we hope he'll be part of those ideas. So thank you again. And if you have a question again for Lisa or Rose, email us at info@punkrats.com. Please, you guys, call us with your questions. Share your stories. We want to hear from you. 512-254-5989. Our website is www.punkrats.com. And of course, we're all over social media, including TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Did I miss anything, Rose?
I don't think so. Just stay until when the music starts, because you'll hear questioned from...
We always have a caller.
We always have a caller. And I guess this is the part where I say, see you later.
Yeah. See you later.
Hey, Punk Brats. My name is Robert. I'm calling from San Diego, California. I really enjoyed listening to your show. My question is, growing up and moving so much, what was the one item that always brought you comfort in each new place you moved to? Appreciate you all.